Welcome back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is with a heavy heart that I start to present some of these Purple Rain throwbacks. I had decided about a month ago to re-release Purple Rain 1 and Purple Rain 2 this summer, sort of in the downtime. I started the re-release of that, and I was going through pictures, and we had the tragedy with Tony Siragusa as well as Jalen Ferguson last week. It has given me a chance for all the wrong reasons to be reaching out to people that I meant to reach out to this guy about 6 weeks ago when he came through. But I did like the show. I bought a ticket. I sat in the stands at the Meyerhof. It was the last time I spent time with Goose. And Hall of Famer Rod Woodson, the humble Hall of Famer, with no disrespect to any other Hall of Famers, my favorite Hall of Famer, not just because he comes on the show. We welcome him in. Rod, we're on the front end of you attending Goose's funeral, so I just want to throw out that this is between here and there, and you're headed east for Goose's funeral. So I just want to sort of timestamp this for anybody who's joining us that wants to reminisce about Goose. And I had underestimated his impact, not only on me, but on you and on the team and on the city.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you get a guy like Goose, you know, just a big personality, takes over the room, no matter what room he's in. I've been in a lot of different situations with Goose, and he never disappoints. He never disappointed as a friend. He never disappointed us on the football field. He was a character. He was big as life, you know, and he played big like that on the field for us. But the end all, we know that this life is short, and I feel for her, his wife, Kathy, and his daughter, Samantha, and son, Anthony. My heart goes out to those guys. I'm crushed. You know, I mean, I'm still trying to get over it. A little bit.
There's a processing period, you know, it really is, you know, like you don't believe it in the beginning, right? Like you might not believe it till you're at the funeral to some degree.
Yeah. I was shocked when I got the phone call. I was just like, there's no way, you know, but you never know when you're with people. You know, we were together when we did the 30 for 30. You never know how good people really are doing. You never know. And you got to hope that we, as we get older as human beings and as men and as fathers and as friends, that we keep taking care of ourselves, that we keep getting our checkups, that we keep making that a priority so we can be around our families as long as possible. Just unfortunate that a person who was just so big in life was cut short. And like I said, you know, I feel for his family more than I do us.
Well, you said bigger than life. I've been using larger than life, and not just because of his stature and his size. And I spoke to this for the 30 for 30 because I thought there would be a press credential and I get to say hello to you. And I didn't even say hello to Marvin. I said hello to Jack for 2 seconds, but I did see Tony and our relationship and the days back at the barn. And, you know, I've since found a bunch of those pictures that I thought that had been unearthed for a long, long time. But I was with his pal Jay, who was always his guy at the barn. I think they met at the barn. Jay was a bouncer at the barn back in the day on the east side, and they're still friends for life. And I saw Jay, and Jay's like, hey, you got to meet Tony's kids. And I'm like, well, they're still this big, right? Like the little girl's about this big with the Mickey Mouse shirt on and all. And she's 25 and the boy's 21. Yeah. And they came over. They gave me warm embrace. Goose was there at the Meyerhof. And then Goose went down the hallway and left me with his son. And I spoke to his son for a couple of minutes. And I had to really think about that would be the last time I'd ever see Goose. And to meet his family and the years that escape. I mean, you only played football with him for a couple of years, right? But there's a part for him that he never was far from anybody, right? Whether it was charity events here in Baltimore, I felt like every time I saw Goose, I just saw Goose. You know, like, because it just has felt that way for 25 years.
It does. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, at the beginning, you know, every time that I've been in different situations with him, you know, we did something with the NSA and, you know, you would think that a Goose would kind of curtail, he would kind of like lower his personality when you're in a room like that with a lot of people from our government. And he didn't. And that's what was, it was so refreshing that he was dropping the F-bomb and, you know, he was talking to the guys, but he made everybody laugh and he made everybody comfortable. He made everybody comfortable in their own skin, because it's like being in somebody's living room on a daily basis. And Goose took that, he took his living room with him everywhere. And it was always fun to be around Goose, be it there, be it in Baltimore, be it seeing him working on TV and I was working on radio, and we would meet in the middle of the field and we'd be talking about players. Somebody like that just leaves a huge impression on you, along with all the other silly things he used to do in the locker room, to teammates, things he used to say to the head coaches, to the general manager,
to the media.
He had no filter. Right, to everyone, to all of us, to all the above. And I think we all knew that it was in fun loving, it was in jest. And everybody loved that about Goose.
You know, he died, and I couldn't believe it in the early part of the afternoon. And I started thinking about how many tapes I had. And I have like a repository with things you and I spent time talking about. You and Ray visited me at the barn in 1998. After the Green Bay Packers game, we weren't very good. You know what I mean? You had just signed up for it. You were 8 weeks into this, and Goose was a year more into that. But I found these old tapes, and the first thing I thought, and this is damn, it make you smile about Goose, right? Is I have all these tapes, and every time I was with him, he said something inappropriate, and then my wife got involved. Then he would say inappropriate things to my wife on the air. My wife and I sat in and did a whole 25-minute thing with him at the Jacksonville Super Bowl. I found this stuff, and I didn't sit and listen to it, and I thought to myself, I know it's inappropriate, but I'm going to run it anyway, you know, because it's Goose, you know,
right.
He had such an ability. He was not just larger than life. Now, I'm talking about a month ago, the 30 for 30. I have my seat back in row W or whatever. I'm 25th row and I'm in the back and they're cheering and it's a made for TV event. It had a little Oscars kind of feel to it, or a little, made for TV. And there's Kevin Byrne in the middle of all of it. You're in the Hall of Fame, no questions. There's Ray in the Hall of Fame, no questions. You know, these coaches, all these people. Goose was the leader on the stage, right? Goose was the star on the stage, no matter who's on the stage. You, Ray, Brian, anybody. Goose is what made the fans laugh. He got the loudest ovations, all of that. And it really made me think over the weekend that he was kind of always your leader, right? Like, you came in, he was already here. Right. I mean, Ray's the only one that sort of came in, Marvin, before any of you got here, John Ogden.
Right.
But Goose was the first one that said, I'm going to go to Baltimore, play for Ted, and we're going to win. And then at some point, Marvin called you and you made that decision. But it really reminds me that other than J.O. and Ray like that, Goose was the first one to put his name here, to hang his hat here and say, I want to come to Baltimore. And for that, there was the leadership that you found when you got here. You're like, oh, that guy, the guy from Pitt, the guy I played against in the championship game, all of that, that guy's a leader, right? A leader of people.
Yeah. Goose got there the year before I got there, Ray and him a couple years before, Tony was just the one thing you like about Tony is that he is who he is. He's not ashamed of it. He's going to let you know about that. But he did work hard when we were on the field. And he did give us peace of mind to our rules and regulations, anything that we had to do as players and policing our own locker room. That was fun. But what Goose really did for everybody, and every team needs it, I think if you find all the great teams around the history of most sports, every team has one of those players or a couple of those players in the locker room where at any moment, you don't know what they're going to say. You don't know who they're going to say it to. And it kept everybody in light. It kept everybody in check. And yeah, we know him for his outgoing personality. But he was a leader. He was a leader in the locker room. He was a leader in the weight room. He was a leader in the meeting room. He was a leader on the practice field. So all the things that we did and accomplished to get into that first Super Bowl for the Ravens, you know, Goose was a huge piece to that puzzle.
Rob Woodson is our guest. He is headed to the funeral of Tony Siragusa. We're all in a little bit of state of shock that we're actually discussing this and the way we're discussing it. Rod, I was releasing Purple Rain 1 just because I'm getting back into writing. I'm going to write again in the fall and get back to being like a columnist as a traditional guy like you would remember it back in the newspaper days in Pittsburgh and whatnot. And some part of that just having these books and having this history. And I was really inspired by this 30 for 30, right? Because and I haven't talked to Brian about it. I haven't had Brian on the show. I haven't had Marvin. I don't think I've had any of you who were on the stage. Jamal's supposed to come on a little later this week. About that and how it came together. And I really started to think about my special space in there with the ring and the parades. And Flynn found the videotape of the parade during the plague like a year and a half ago that had been lost for 19 years. So there's all of this that comes back to it. But then there's y'all go in the Hall of Fame and there's this greatness and this coaching tree and all of that, that ESPN would say the greatest defense in the history of the game and maybe not chronicled as such or remembered as such, but it is. And if you go back and you look statistically in every way, that there's now an awakening for what that represented. And you signing up to come in and Goose signing up and Billick coming in and Steve Bisciotti's money and Trent Dilfer and all the things we talked about on stage. But 20 years later, I wrote a book about it from my own sort of diary, my first person inside some stories and stuff. But you being on the inside of that, there is a legend to that that I feel is about to grow. And in the way that a DiMaggio streak or a Ripken, any sort of streak would grow, because I think it's impossible for a defense to do what you did, you know, and now when you start to look at it, it's time to make some movies and stuff about it and talk about it. Very unfortunate, obviously, with Goose, but that night really led me to believe, oh, there's going to be a heck of a halo for that team specifically in a way that maybe we thought about the 85 Bears or some teams that stood the test of time. It feels like this is one of those hit singles from 20 years ago that's going to come back and become a standard. That defense, because of your role and your stature, all of you, that it's about to get played again.
I think so. You know, I think, you know, when we look at what we accomplished in that year on the defensive side, a lot of people want to give us, you know, don't want to give us the credit. They want to kind of put an asterisk beside it saying, oh, we didn't play great players and great quarterbacks, which is a bunch of baloney. We played who we played. I don't, you know, that's all we can do as players.
72 Dolphins never apologize, do they?
No, not at all. So, I mean, it's, you know, we went out and I thought that we, you know, when I first got there in 98, when Marvin called me and said, we got some really good pieces, you know, he talked about bringing in Tony the year before. Talking about, you know, what we needed to do. And when I got there, realizing that we had some work to do on the field, like in our mindsets, in our personalities, in our processes of doing things the right way.
Said it, Rob Woodson. You would always say, when I went over to the lock, you'd say, we're trying to get right. You would always say that, doing the right things. We're trying to get right. That was your line, brother.
Yeah, I mean, I still say it today, trying to get into the mindset of doing everything on a stage of excellence, you know, because we are what we repeatedly do. And, you know, in 98, we were, you know, okay, you know, we played up and down like a roller coaster. We were 6-10. And then, you know, that was Ted's last year, Roger Broda, the head coach. And then Brian Billick comes in. And, you know, his first year, we're 8-8. Then we get rid of, it was some of those guys that were still there that really didn't love ball. They really didn't, wasn't all in. And some of those guys we got rid of over the course of the first 2 years. But then, you know, getting Shannon, Ray growing, you know, it was in his third year, but Ray going in his fourth year, in his fifth year, you know, the maturity of him on the field, off the field, the maturity of Tony and myself and Shannon, all those things came into play. And then, you know, even the maturity of Trent Dilfer on that side of the ball, and a lot of people don't want to give Trent any love whatsoever for our football team, but he knew who he was. And most quarterbacks don't. Most quarterbacks want to be that gunslinger, Dan Marino, throw it all over the place. And that's not who Trent was. You know, Trent was a hard-nosed, hard-fought, did what he knew he had to do, what only things that he could do. And he did those things for us. And then defensively, we just got better and better each and every week. And then that year, Marvin Lewis had some great game calls. I mean, he had some great game plans. He had some great calls inside the games. You know, the first couple of years, he would call some of the defenses in certain situations. I'd be like, oh, heck no, Marv, you can't call that, man. And then, he kept growing. He kept getting better. And that year, this everything that he did with all the players that we had, I don't slight anybody. I don't slight the Chicago Bears defense. I don't slight the New York Giants defense. I don't slight the old 49ers defense, the Minnesota Vikings defense, the Orange Crush. The Steel Curtain. I don't slight any of those defenses whatsoever. But as statistically, and that's what you normally go by when you talk about greatness, right? When you talk about the whole, when you talk statistically, we just shattered the 86 Bears record. Because that's who broke all the records. It wasn't the 85 Bears. 85 Bears won the Super Bowl. The 86 Bears defense that did all the records. We shattered that by like 23 points. It's never going to be broken. It will.
Well, that's my point. My point is it's one of those. It's never. Now you got more games, too, in a season, right? So
yeah, and then, I mean, 4 shutouts, all right, in the year. 5 more games.
You can play anybody, but you shut out Aikman. Just a Hall of Famer. That's all. No quarterbacks that year, right? That's all, right?
Yeah. No quarterback. You know, but I think 5 more games we had, only 1 score. And then I think, no, it was 7 more games with 1 touchdown, 10 points or less. And then I think we gave up, second game of the year, we gave up like 35, and that was the most we ever given up. And that kind of hurt our average at the end of the year to Jacksonville. And that's when Jacksonville was, they were a really good football team. I mean, Fred Taylor, and they were a really good football team. So we did our part and everything kind of came together. You know, people don't want to give us credit, but if you're really a football historian, you got to give us love because we shattered all those records. We did everything that we had to do. And we just had a suffocating from up front, having Tony Siragusa and Sam Adams and Ron Burnett and Peter Boulware, Michael McCreary all up front to our linebacker crew, to our secondary. We were just a swarming fast defense. We all ran to the ball. It just made us great. And it didn't happen in 2000. It happened when they drafted J.O. and Ray. That's when it kind of started. That was the nucleus of it. And then bringing in those other pieces, bringing in Tony there before I got there. And then I come in and then Shannon comes in and then it kind of all blossoms. So, having said that, yes, I think you're right. I think that 30 for 30 is the start of it. Because if you really want to be honest about it and you start looking at how we really played, we dominated so many teams throughout the year. And when your offense doesn't score a touchdown for 5 games, you can still win 2 of those games. I don't know what to say. I mean, that's very rarely done in today's game. But it's not done at all in today's game.
Well, if he had the 99 Rams, nobody would talk about the defense. The defense was lopsided, right? The defense was better than the offense. We can all say that. Everybody on the offense would admit that at this point, right? But that being said, 2 Hall of Famers on the offense. I mean, it's just it was a star-studded team that has had these legs over 2 decades that has done something, to your point. It'll never be accomplished again. And I think because all of you are getting a little gray and we're getting there over the next 20 years, I think you're going to, every time you do an interview, you'll talk about it. Rob Woodson is here, the humble Hall of Famer. I just want to say this to you, man, because I have all these old tapes of you, and you and I don't think have ever gone a year without doing a radio segment, whether it's at the Super Bowl, even when you're coaching in a league and whatnot. And we've had a relationship and, dare I say, a friendship at various points. But I don't think I've ever on the air or even over a cocktail discussed the team with you and that year with you in that retrospective. So Rod, tell me about Super Bowl 35, or tell me about Goose, or tell me about, like, in the way that they're doing it. 'Cause you were always relevant to being on TV. When you and I were getting together, we were talking about Joe Flacco. We're talking about, right, is Ray going to stay? We're talking about your coaching, or we're talking about Tom Brady in the Super Bowl again. But it's not something you wear on your sleeve, even about your Pittsburghness or your track starness or Purdue or any of that. You don't talk about you or history much. You're always sort of in the here and now and looking out the windshield to be sitting around patting yourself on the back, even with the gold jacket on. But talking about that period of time and coming in again and doing it on a stage, mic'd up, knowing it's, I'm assuming it's the last time you saw Goose, right? I mean, I think for all, yes, a lot of us, that thing now becomes even more special, right? What happened a month ago, that convergence when you get together and you tell these stories that people think when you all get together and drink, you're all talking about it. Man, you're talking about your kids and what's going on. Like, you don't sit around for hours like the Bruce Springsteen, yeah, song talking about the glory days. You know what I mean? But this is a nice time to do that. And certainly the death of Goose has led me to believe that we should do more of it, talking about the glory days too.
Yeah, I mean, it's, life is short, man. You know, Ness, we know that. The pandemic, that hitting, that kind of woke us all up as human beings. This, you know, faith and family is everything, and friends. Life is short. A lot of our contemporaries are starting to pass away. You know, I didn't know Ferguson personally, but, you know, having somebody of that age and that young, and we see across the board, across the U.S., you know, week in and week out, day after day, how these young people are dying. But, you know, when guys like Kevin Green pass away, and then Tony Siragusa, you know, and Ferguson, it kind of opens your eye socket up a little bit, you know, saying, you know what, this is too short, man. Let me reach out. So I've been reaching out over the last year or so to a lot of close friends that we used to be really close with in the locker room and outside of football, just to say hello, just to say, what's up, man, how you doing? And hopefully they're taking care of themselves. I keep encouraging them to, you know, just to take care of themselves, you know, if exercise in some capacity, you know, try to read books, try to do puzzles, try to keep your mind strong, try to be here on this earth as long as possible with your family and your loved ones. Because when it's gone, it's tragic and it's going to hurt a lot of people. You know, so with that being said, yeah, we don't talk about our defense that often. We don't talk about how great we were. And I think I'm very fair when it comes to football. I love ball. I think I'm very neutral when it comes to dominant defenses. And the reason they don't make us the dominant defense, because we didn't do it over a course of a span of time, right? So we didn't do it for 3 straight years or 4 straight years or 2 straight years. We did, but that 1 year, and that's what I always tell people, that 1 year, that was the best defense in the history of football. Statistically, everything that you talk about, and especially with the shutouts, when you start talking about shutouts and not scoring and your offense is not scoring, but you still can win because we're winning, you know, 6-9. That's, you know, that's, it's just unheard of. So, you know, I have much love for what we accomplished in Baltimore and how great we were on defense. I knew it didn't last. It didn't start and it didn't happen just that year. It happened with all the pieces coming alive, you know, Tony getting there right after Ray and JL get drafted. A year after that, Tony comes in first and then I come in, and then they got all the other draft choices. So, you know, Ozzy, and, you know, and also we got to give a lot of love to, you know, the March of Broda, you know, you know, he did a tremendous job, and you had to get a lot of love to Art Modell, who, you know, gets a lot of hazing because he did move the team from one city to the next, you know, but Art was a tremendous influence on a lot of people. I remember Art used to drive around in his little golf cart, and he always would come back to where we was stretching at, and he always would give Ray Lewis a big hug. He wouldn't hug anybody else, but he would hug Ray. So, but we knew that was like, you know, that was like the start of the day. Every time that happened, that was the start of our day. Like, let's get things popping. And, you know, I think Art doesn't get I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. He's the only Hall of Fame owner that was a part of the merger that's not in it only because he moved his team. You know, so I think there's a lot of different things that we can discuss. Talking about Tony and talking about how great we were in 2000 was a combination of a lot of individuals when it comes to Ozzie Newsome, the general manager, putting all these pieces together. When it talks about, and then you got to think, you know, Art was the owner and Art gave him permission to do that, to spend that money, to get all these guys in there and the people he got there, you know, Goose was the, Goose was the funniest, the most outgoing person I've ever been around. And I've been around some outgoing people in all of my
life. I'm trying to think, is there anybody I got a lot of personality with me too, Wood, you know, but I can't think of anybody
He breaks the mold of what a football player is. Because I don't know if I've ever seen him serious. It's like the whole time I just like, he's always cracking jokes. He's always making fun. And even in a critical situation, he cracks the joke, which kind of helped us. And it really helped the young players because he would say things in the middle of the huddle. You'd be like, this dude is nuts. But it relaxed some of the young guys instead of being tense and all, you know, and all wound up. Goose was the opposite of that. And that was refreshing. I've been around funny guys and guys who like to joke around and all that stuff, but I've never been around a person in that capacity throughout his lifetime in any settings. Because normally when the owner's there, you kind of like button up. No, not Goose. Goose ain't button up. You know, if Art said something, Art going to get it too. So, I mean, he had that personality, but that was our personality of our football team. But that was also our personality of our defense. That we did. We made a lot of jokes. We cracked a lot of jokes on each other during the game, in the huddle. Ray will be doing his little ha, 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 you know, where my dog's at? And we'll be cracking jokes on Ray, right? We just kept it loose. But it was Goose was like the catalyst of that because that's who he was 365, 7 days a week, his whole lifetime.
Did you know him before you got here? Like, and I've never asked you this, and I don't even know if I asked you this back in the day, and you might have given me the radio answer. Now I might get the real answer 25 years later. Why did you sign up here? I don't know that I really know the reason. Because I remember, I mean, Marvin and I were already really close at that point in our lives. We just were. Right. And we would go out and dine together every week or two. We'd have lunch. He was teaching me football. He was adamant that I was going to know what I was talking about on the radio. He was fatherly. He's a teacher, you know? So I remember him telling me, we're going to get Rob Woodson here. And I had just bumped into you at a Super Bowl sort of errantly at a party. And I thought, I thought you were kind of a big deal. And I thought, like, he ain't coming here. Why would he? I mean, go ahead, Marvin. I know he likes you and you're Pittsburgh and like, but he ain't coming here. And he's never gonna make him a safety. And I'm like, I wonder what he thinks of that. And then the whole San Francisco thing. And where were you at that point that this became not just attractive to have a job and with somebody you like, but really thinking you could win? Because, I mean, guys like you and Shannon didn't show up here to get a paycheck and, you know, you didn't show up for the weather or as Art once said, for the crab cakes. You know, you really did believe, maybe before other people believed they could win. Before Billick was even here, you believed somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I came, you know, I was in San Fran for the 1 year in 97. We lost in a championship game. My wife was pregnant with our child. And I was just like, I can't do this. I can't live on the play on the West Coast and my family, my wife is back with the kids in Pittsburgh. And then Marvin called like a week after free agency started and said, hey, listen, we got a lot of great talent here. You know, we got to put some more pieces to the puzzles and they have to learn how to win. And then once Marvin called me, I was like, hey, if we're going to run our style of defense. And at that point, I still played corner my first 2 years in Baltimore. I said, hey, I'll come. And then, you know, I know who Ray is. You know, I know who J.O. is. I don't know the rest of the pieces to the puzzle. So I really came because of Marv's belief system and his belief in all the guys we had there and all the guys that they were going to collect over the years. And that had to be, you know, talked about from the coaching staff to, you know, obviously Art Modell and Ozzie and all those guys. So they had a belief that they're going to get a lot of different good players there. And I bought in. I bought into what Marvin said to me on the phone. It's a beautiful city. And I tell people all the time, if I was drafted by the Baltimore Ravens, I would absolutely be living in Baltimore because it's a gorgeous place. So for me, Marvin was that key. Picked up the phone, said we needed some veteran leadership. When I got there, they're all calling me Grandpa Woodson. And I used to play with you on Tecmo Bowl, Mr. Woodson. I'm like, dude, do not call me Mr. Woodson in this locker room. We're going to be fighting. Like, that's my dad. Like that, don't call me Mr. Woodson. But that's how it was. And so Marvin was the guy. Marvin was the key, though, to answer the question as.
Well, I might have called you Mr. Woodson the first time I walked up to you, too. Rob Woodson is here, the Humble Hall of Famer, headed. It's hard for me to even say to the funeral of Tony Siragusa. Rod, I've been looking through pictures and finding stuff, and it's like Goose is still effing with me. You know, that was our relationship. That there, I remembered in the middle of the night. There's all sorts of stories that I've told on the air, and a lot of it's out there. I'm just going to share two with you. When you were gone for one of them, after the Super Bowl the next year, when you went and played for the Raiders and went to the Super Bowl, we played after 9/11. We played out in Denver, and I couldn't get home, and I don't know what it's like to be concussed, right? But Goose was concussed during the game. And David allowed me to fly on the charter home because I didn't have a flight home because it was 9/11 and my flight through Arizona got canceled, right? So they let me fly home so I could do my show. And I'm walking through the bowls of the Invesco Stadium, brand new. And Goose is sitting with his bag, sweating, just sitting on the curb. And I know he had gotten hurt in the game. And I guess this is, we didn't take concussions as seriously as we should have, right? You know, whatever. And he said, hey, come over here, come over here. He said, sit down. He put his arm around me. He said, I love you, man. I love you. And I said, I love you too, Goose. And I said, let's get on the bus, you know? And I got on the bus and he didn't have any recollection of it at all. He didn't remember it because he got hit. And he was not himself when he was even saying it. It wasn't Goose. It wasn't the guy you and I know breaking balls right. And like all that. It's a completely different personality that I saw for that 45 seconds or whatever. And it took me, I mean, I know I brought it up with him 15 years ago, but I haven't thought about it in a long time. Why would I? And the other thing is, after all these pictures, there's this old picture of me and him in Marino. When I saw you in San Diego, 1998, whenever it was, it was that Super Bowl. Yeah, it was the 98 Super Bowl. It was the Denver Green Bay Super Bowl. Marino had a party and Goose invited me. So I went, I had a picture. I was looking for the original. And then I realized Goose did a Christmas album. Goose did a Christmas album singing Christmas standards in Indianapolis with a bunch of his teammates for charity. And I have a copy of it. And I'm going to find the damn thing. Now I got, Rod, I got 15,000 CDs, right? So I mean, they're hard. And they're all in these loose things. I started looking and looking, and I got through three boxes, couldn't find it. I got through the Christmas stuff, wasn't there. I'm like, maybe it's with the football stuff or with some special stuff. Rod, it was at the bottom of the last box, at the bottom of the bottom in a hard shell, and I looked up, and I swear Goose winked at me coming off the cover of that CD because it took me everything because I kept thinking. And I even put a shout-out to Jim Irsay on the web because I'm like, Goose singing Blue Christmas, Elvis style, no, in 1994, 95, no one's heard this. I'm the only one with it, right? I found the CD, Rod, but it was midnight Sunday. It took me 3.5 days, but I found the CD, and I thought, that's Goose. He want me to have to look through everything. Make me do it the hard way. I want my restitution.
No, I mean, that's who he was, though. I mean, he was like that all the time.
Well, listen, I know you're going to see your friends and your teammates under some tough circumstances. I have no idea when this ESPN thing is going to come out. I'll reach back to you at some point when we're talking about Lamar and contracts and football and all that good stuff. But I appreciate you allowing me to peel the onion back from the very complex Rod Woodson.
Well, I appreciate you, Ness, man, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. And listen, for the rest of your life, I'm going to let you brag on a Super Bowl 35 team with complete, don't be humble. They're the best ever. Remember that.
I appreciate you. I remember.
Rob Woodson joining us here. I am Nestor. We're still telling stories about the Goose. And at some point, if I don't have any ASCAP regulations, I'll play a Goose singing "I'll Be Home for Christmas" with Trev Alberts. I'm Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.